Good morning, everybody. Did you guys see my new wheels here? Sometimes it's good to be the pastor, huh? And not only that, but he made a matching iPad holder for me, too. Look at that. See, you got the little logo on there? Pretty cool, huh? Either he thought I was getting old and couldn't pick up the podium and carry it anymore, or he just liked me. Well, we've been going through a journey of trust, and we've been studying Abraham. And Abraham has been teaching us quite a few things. Have you guys been enjoying Abraham at all? Yeah, I have. I have seen some things I haven't seen before, and today is one of them. I'm a little bit excited about the ending of this deal. Don't want to spoil it for you, but it's pretty cool. You might want to take notes. We've discovered that in Abraham's life, his life is not his own, but his life has ripple effects, right? The Lord said, I will bless you so that you will be a blessing. And our lives have ripple effects. We're not just floating here, me, myself, and I, but everything I do has ripple effects that affect lives around me and the people that I come in contact to. And you do too. And we saw that with Abraham. And then we discovered that God called Abraham. He says, hey, listen, I want you to go out to a place I will show you. Sometimes when God calls, you know it without a doubt. We have an opportunity to either respond or to reject. But when God calls, and we see this Abram character. He was Abram, and then later he becomes Abraham. So if I interchange those, just roll with me, will you? But we see Abram, he did. This one true God calls him and he says, okay, I'll go. And as you see there, he travels up from Ur, the land of the Chaldeans, and he follows the water up towards Haran and then comes down to the Canaan area. But when he gets there, and, you know, he says, hey, I will bless you so that you will be a blessing. But when he gets there, what does he discover? Famine. Isn't that interesting? I'm not quite sure, but I think there might be a pattern to that. I'm not ready to jump way out there and go, hey, but a lot of times God will call us, and then we hit famine or want or desert or whatever you want to call that territory in life. And God says, are you going to trust me even in the midst of famine? Are you going to trust me even in time of want? And so we did notice that Abram did not do so well. He goes down to Egypt there and he plays on his old tricks of conniving and lying and telling stories. And he threw his wife right under the bus there, didn't he? But he sugarcoated it. You are so beautiful. Yeah, it didn't work so well, did it? But he comes back and he begins again. Sometimes we do hit famine areas. Sometimes we do hit desert areas. And the secret is not to give up, but to begin again. Let's begin again. And we see Abram comes back to the Canaan area or the Hebron area there. And he makes an altar to the Lord. He says, I recommit. And then last week, as we studied through Abram, we discovered that sometimes when we have plenty is also a time we forget about God. And here Abram was, and he had gold and silver and sheep and goats and all sorts of livestock and people under his tent that he cared for, and he was doing really well. And the ripple effect of the blessing that Abram got also rippled out to the blessing that Lot got. And in time of plenty, but we want to be sure that we don't forget God. He asks us to remember Him in times of need and in times of plenty, right? And so today we come across Abram, and he's scared. He's worried. Things are still going well. He's got plenty of plenty of goods. But last week, he had gone to war to get Lot back from being captured. Okay, so way up at the top of the map, there's a blue dot, right? That's where the four kings got together and said, "Hey, you guys, here we go again with my mafia sort of, hey, you need to pay us a fee for your protection, right? Yeah, and if, I'm sorry, just, yo, listen here, I've got a proposition for you. You can't refuse, because if you don't pay the fee for your protection, you'll need protection from me, right?" And so all those red dots down at the bottom of the map there are five kings that were under the protection from the kings from the north, right? And they, for about 12 months, or for about a year, they did. They paid that fee. But then they thought, you know, I don't think we want to pay this fee anymore. And really, is he going to come all the way down from the north to come and collect this fee? And if not, I think we can take him. We got five kings. He's only got four kings, except his four kings' territory was much greater than this. And they did. And in the 14th month, he came down and he swept up all those and took all the peoples, the goods, the land, the gold, the silver, and started back up to the north. And it didn't work so well. They needed the protection, apparently, right? Well, word gets over to Abram, and that's the blue dot on the other side there, in the Hebron area, the Canaan area, and word comes to him that Lot, his nephew, had been taken in this raid. So he gathers up his 318 men who are trained under him, you know, and they go after him. And it was through wit and cunning that his smaller group was able to rout the larger group, and also he was blessed by God, right? So he gets Lot, and the whole story goes. But so now the problem is, and this is where Abram's at, is those kings are going to gather and regroup and probably come after him, right? I mean, that's the way this whole war thing works, right? Oh, he caught us off guard, but we're much bigger. We can take him. We'll surprise him. We'll show up. And Abram's scared. And so that's kind of where we're at today as we start our study today. And before we get too far into that, have any of you ever signed a contract of any sort? Yeah? Hey, anybody done a mortgage? Cats Caroli, there's like 500 pages to put your name on. And if you miss your initials on one of them, they gotta hunt you down and get your initial and all that. It's crazy. Sign up for a car lately? Yeah, that'll do it, won't it? As a pastor, I get the opportunity to do social contracts, if you will, or marriages. That's a contract, isn't it? Believe you me, the state will come after me if I don't do the contract right. And we do it, when I do it, I put it as part of the ceremony. We just sign all that stuff and do it right in the ceremony. And lately, the state also has been recognizing a covenant marriage, which is a little more stringent with the rules and things like that. And it's pretty neat. Some people opt for it and some people don't. Now, Brittany and I, when she was little, we had a very serious contract together. It's called the Pinky Promise. This is a grievously binding contract, you know. Listen, if you don't get down there and play Barbies at the end of the day, you're in serious trouble, right? You know the Pinky Promises. So we actually know quite a bit about contracts in the Bible. The Bible talks a lot about it. And then in the Syrian area, they found about 25,000 of these tablets. They're called the Mara tablets, and I have no idea what the hieroglyphics say, but somebody does, and they read it, and they discovered that this has a lot to do with contracts during this time period. All right? And so the most common type of contract was not like, hey, nowadays we say we're going to draw up a contract, right? Because you pen and paper and you're going to draw up the contract, right? They would call it a covenant. So if you see covenant in the Bible, it's actually a contract. But they would say we're going to cut a covenant. And let me explain that to you. So they were called suzerain vassal covenants. Do you know what a suzerain vassal covenant is? Anybody gone to seminary lately? Okay, James and Maureen. So the suzerain would be the big king, the one who has all the power, who won the war, who beat up everybody else, who has all the control. That's the suzerain part of the contract. The vassal part of the contract is the little king, the little guy, the one that didn't win, or the one that saw them coming and said, I give up. We just do whatever you say and just don't kill us. And so the suzerain vassal contract would go like this. I am king now. I own all this land, and I will bless you by allowing you to live in it and work the land for me. Right? Doesn't that sound like good? He was so kind and so generous that he gave his blessing that you get to live in my land and work so hard for the goods that you're going to produce for me, right? And then what they would do is they would get some animals, cows, goats, sheep, birds, whatever, and they would cut them right in half. Oh, it was a glorious sight, I'm sure. Ugh. Look at that, it's on wheels. So they would put one half of the animal on one side, one half of the animal on, and sometimes it was several animals that they would do. And all the blood and the gook and the guts would be, I mean, this is gross. It is just gross. If anybody's thinking about getting married, maybe we could introduce that to part of the ceremony. No? No? Okay, well. But then what they would do is they would walk through between to seal this covenant and say, if I break our contract, then I will be like these animals. You can do this same thing to me. Okay? And so that was the covenant. And I don't know about you, but if I had to walk through that, you know, I don't even go outside without my shoes on. I think it would be a memorable moment. I think you go, I don't think I want to end up like that. Right? And so this is what contracts were, or covenants were, back during this period of time. So let's move on to our character. Abram. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. And why was he afraid? Those kings are going to come back after him, right? Yeah. He's worried. Because he's just a little guy in Canaan. And those big kings can definitely take him. He says, don't be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. I'll protect you. Don't worry. I'm here. I've got this. He says, they can't come after you because I won't let them. And so here we are, and we see Abram in a place of doubt. Have you ever doubted God? Don't say it out loud because you might get a lightning strike, right? Hey, God, are we okay? Have you ever had doubts about your relationship with God? You don't have to answer that because I already know the answer. I have had doubts. I have been told to go places and do a thing for the Lord, and I have prayed so fervently about it that I knew it was God that told me to do it. And you get out there and it's famine. It's desert. I've been there. I've been betrayed by people that I've given my heart and my love to. Are you with me? And in those moments, do you go, hey, what's the deal here? I thought you told me to come out here. What's going on? This hurts. I am broken. Huh? Anybody? Abram's no different. The very next thing he says here, but Abram said, Sovereign Lord, still respectful. It's good. Yeah. When you make those questions of God, it might be helpful to still be respectful. What can you give me since I remain childless and the one who will inherit my estate, Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, you have given me no children. So a servant in my household will be my heir. Hey, Abram, slow down. What's the energy? You're talking to God, right? I think there's something very interesting in this moment. Abram represents real. Abram at this point is very real with God. And he says, listen, it's been about 15 years since you called me from Ur. We were already well along in years. It's been about 15, and I don't have any churlins yet. Several years ago, I had a friend who tried to have children. Then there would be moments of joy. We're pregnant. Then there's a miscarriage. And one of the things they said is that it's not just like, oh, we're not pregnant yet. It's an anxious month by month looking at that little tester machine saying you're not pregnant. It's heartache over and over and over again. It's even greater heartache when you miscarry. It's tears in the bathroom. And in this particular culture where Abram and Sarai are, if you don't have children, it's your neighbors, stupid neighbors, going, what have you done wrong? Why have you angered God? Because if you don't have any children, it's because God doesn't like you, or the gods, or how, you know. It's heartache and pain. And eventually you begin to say things like, maybe this just isn't for us. Right? Maybe that moment has just passed. Listen, he's 85, 90 years old. I think it's safe to say the moment has passed, maybe, right? And he says, listen, you said I'd have children, and it's been 15 years. Do you think Abram's in a okay place to question God? Do you think it's okay to question God? I think it absolutely is. Because you can see Abram's heart being right open with God. I'll bet you God prefers that. After all, if you've been around the church any number of years, you may have heard this, and there's some truth to it. God's not interested in your religion. He's interested in your relationship. And I think what we see here is a real relationship between Abram and God, where Abram gets to say to God, listen, I came out here for you. I've seen you. I've seen your hand in helping me in different things, but you know, here we are, 50 years, and I'm beginning to wonder. Have you ever doubted? And then people say helpful things like, well, God's timing is not our timing. So helpful, isn't it? Yeah, I've heard that one before. Thank you for reiterating. Thank you for just kind of sticking that right back in there, right? Be patient, for the Lord is patient. Yeah, I've been patient. I think God wants you to enter into relationship with Him where you can say things like, okay, God, I want to trust you, but I have some doubts. Help my doubts. Help my unbelief. And we see a moment, we see a spot here where Abram asks of him, can I trust you? And really, 15 years into a relationship sounds like a long time, but it's not. I've been married to my wife for 26 years, and I'm still learning stuff about her. Right? I'm exactly the same as I ever been, so. You guys that have been married 50 years, you know better, right? But I think it's okay to be in a moment of doubt, but be real with God. Okay, God, I'm here. I've been here, and I'm out here. But my heart's aching a little bit, and I'm beginning to wonder, how is this going to work out? I'm 90 years old, and I don't know if you noticed Sarai, but she's just a little bit younger than me. Then the word of the Lord came to him. This man will not be your heir, but a son who is your own flesh and blood will be your heir. And then he took him outside, and it's almost like, imagine with me, it's almost like he took him, come on out here. I want to show you something. Come on out here. Let me talk to you. Look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. I always like a little sarcasm from God. I always like that part. I don't know why. Maybe I don't know. If indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. You know what's in this conversation? Tenderness, love, care. Listen, I'm going to make you a promise. You can trust me. You know what's missing from this conversation? Anger. Sarah from the conversation. Yeah. Oh, boy. Let's not go there. Oh, dear. This could fall apart real quickly, right? What's missing from this conversation is a God who's impatient with his subject. Oh, Abraham, don't you realize I've been with you this whole time? You think you won that war up there? No. That was me. You think all of this extra you got? There's none of that back and forth conversation. It's a gentle, hey, listen. I promised to be with you, and I'm with you. I promised you an heir, and I will give you an heir. I will give you more than just an heir. I will give you so many you can't even count them. See, God's the God of a big picture. And a lot of times we get wrapped up in the moment we're in. And God's got a great big picture that he wants to show us. Because this is generations when you have that many offspring. That's generations and generations. God is seeing a much bigger picture, and he's so patient. And then what we see from Abram is this. And Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. He says, okay, I'll believe you. That the last one we got, I almost skipped over that, which is a mistake. I also see in here a little bit of not just questioning what God is doing, but also questioning himself. Why in the world am I way out in the middle of this desert? I was doing okay in Ur. You ever question yourself or doubt yourself? I've got a particular dream that I'm not sure I can do it anymore. You ever had one of those? Like, I've always wanted to build my own house. You know? Isn't that sound like a great dream? I may have waited too long. I don't know if I've got it in me anymore. When I was young and dumb and full of all kinds of energy to go out there and do a thing and I could get hurt and heal quicker, I was ready to do that. I still got a Band-Aid on my boo-boo finger 2 weeks ago. And it still hurts. And Ann and I had a conversation the other day, and she was real with me. I'd really like to build us a house, Ann. She goes, well, listen, this is going to sound harsh. No, I still love you, but there's several projects around our house you hadn't finished yet. Oh. Ain't it the truth, though, right? And I had to be real with myself. You know, I'm not sure I'd have the energy to build myself a house. Will you help me? Let's do this. We got this, right? But sometimes you have your own doubts about right where you're at, where God called you to be, and you're wondering if you've got the goods within you. And sometimes that is a very scary moment. Far more scary than some army that's coming after you. I think I can handle, but it's all that God told me I would do. Really? I can do that? I'm not sure. And I see that in here. Abram makes a choice. He chooses to what? He makes a choice. Okay, God, you said it. I believe it. But then we see. Cindy, I love you. I love you. You guys must be getting hungry or something. Faith is choosing to trust even in the midst of doubt. Are you with me? Faith is choosing to trust even when it doesn't look like trust is there. Right? He also said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to take possession of it. Remember. Listen, all 4 weeks we've been at this so far, there's been a underlying theme. Remember, remember, remember. Listen, when you remember something, and some people remember things by writing down in a journal. Is anybody here a journaler? Yeah, several of you. Yeah. I have seen people write down prayer requests with answers next to them and hang on to them. I've seen people that have several journals on their shelf. This is year 2000, 2001, and they've got a journal that's just clicking along, and it's filled full of God's promise, and they'll pull them off the shelf, and they'll read through, oh yeah, that was a good one, right? Now, going through the Bible in a particular time of history where history was oral history, where people would tell stories, right? That is also a way of remembering. I remember back in my day when the older I get, the more stories I think I have. Yeah. I remember I did a job near a house where I grew up. I grew up just over there, and that's when God... And my purpose was to tell that person I was telling the story a time when God did something in my life. And I was remembering, that's when God came through for me. Now listen, remember, God is the key to building your trust and building your faith. Remembering the times when he came through. Fear sells. I was in the Home Depot the other day, and we had a terrible joke. My one of the guys that works for me, he told a terrible joke. It was bad, but we were talking about the coronavirus, you know, and we found out that at Home Depot, every single face mask that they have is sold completely out. They're also completely out of Purell. So is Lowe's. So is Ace Hardware. Fear sells. And you turn the news on, what are you seeing? Fearful things, right? The market's crashing. Matter of fact, everybody's telling you all the bad things about everything else out there. Every politician's terrible, every one of them. Nobody's left out of the fun of that deal, right? I think it's important for you to remember the good things that God has done in your life. And to spend more time on that than building up the fear in your own self. Spend more time remembering. I remember when God came through for me right when I needed him. I remember when Brittany's eye was all clogged up, and every morning we would take hot washcloths and work the gook out of her eyes because she couldn't open her eyes because they were sealed shut from the goo. And we had to take her in for surgery, and the description of the surgery was, we're going to take pipe cleaners to her tear ducts. Oh, what? And that's my baby girl. I was terrified for her. What happens if this doesn't work? What happens if you blind my baby girl? And I remember I had to say, okay, God, you go into surgery with her. And she came out as perfect as could be. And God came through for me in that moment. That's just one of many. Right? Tell those stories. Tell them to your children when they wake up. Tell them when they lie down. Tell them as you're walking along the way. That comes from a good book called Deuteronomy. It's in the Bible. Remember me, he says. And here, I am the Lord. I'm the one that brought you out here. I'm not going to leave you. Remember that I'm the one that told you all this would be yours. And here you are out here in this land. Do you remember a little bit ago when Lot left and I took you up on the hill? I said, look as far as you can look. Look as far as you can see. That will be yours. You can count on me. Remembering builds trust. That was the whole idea. But Abram said, Sovereign Lord, how can I know that I will gain these possessions? He's still in that moment of doubt, right? He's still in that moment of doubt. And it's in him, right? So the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. What's happening? What's going on here? Wait. It's the covenant, right? We're gonna make a promise, right? And Abram brought all these things to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut in half. Then the birds of prey came down on the carcasses, but Abraham drove them away. No. We still got a promise. You guys get away from here. He's going to make a covenant with the Lord, isn't he? A contract. Now, watch what happens here, because this fascinates me. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep. Who else do we know where God put somebody into a deep sleep? Adam. And what happened when Adam was in a deep sleep? God began to create. So, as good Hebrews as you are, right? You should remember that the first time we saw somebody put into a deep sleep, it was Adam, and God was doing something. Then a deep sleep and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, "Know for certain. Know this." Listen, when somebody, I need you to know something. My dad would say, "Listen, Brian." And that was when I knew it was time to tune in, focus in, right? I need you to know something. Last night, my Brittany called, and she just wanted to chat. And before she hung up, I said, "Listen, Brittany, I want to tell you something. I am so very proud of you." I told her, "Listen up, you need to know. Your dad is so very proud of you." This is a moment like that. "Know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and that they will be enslaved and mistreated there. But I will punish the nation that they serve as slaves, and afterwards they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your ancestors in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure." He's doing something with somebody else. "When the sun had set and darkness had fallen, a smoking fire pot with blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, 'To your descendants I will give this land, from the Wadi to Egypt to the great river Euphrates, the land of the Kenites, Kenizzites, Kedemites, Hittites, Perizzites, Rephaites, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, and Jebusites.'" That's a lot of sights. What a sight to see. Now listen, who is the one who passed through to make the promise of the covenant? God did the work. It wasn't Abram. And who in this particular scenario is the suzerain? God is obviously the suzerain. He's not the one that's supposed to pass through, is he? He's not the one that's supposed to pass through and say, if I break this covenant, this should happen to me. So God passes through and essentially saying in this covenant that if I break this covenant or if you break this covenant, this will be what becomes. And listen, what happened is that the Hebrew people broke the covenant, and God made good on the promise by sending Jesus to go to the cross. Whoa, just right there. Listen, that was a big jump, but listen, God fulfills his promises even when he wasn't the one that failed. All of this to say, even in the midst of your doubts, God still follows through on his promises. He can still be trusted. No matter what you do, God makes good. What his word says is true and good and right. And you can trust him. And if I can teach anything to my children, if I could teach anything to you guys, I want you to know that God is trustworthy. He is trustworthy when he calls you out. He is trustworthy when you are in the desert in times of famine. He is trustworthy when things are going great for you. He is trustworthy even when you doubt and you are in the midst of fear. Oh no, what will my future become? Did any of you retire at the exact same time the stock market crashed? Did you have doubts going, oh no, what will my future become? Has God still been trustworthy? I mean, it's been several years since then. Can you today go, God has been trustworthy? That's true. He's taking care of me. I'm okay. I want to be the kind of guy that lives his life who trusts God. I want to be able to say to my children, I have spent my life trusting God, and you can too. I want to be able to tell everybody who is a ripple effect of my life, listen, this life is worth it, and God is faithful and true. And you can trust me. And today, as we have communion together, and as Jesus sat down with his disciples and had this meal together, he says, listen, I am going away from you. And what's to come next, you're going to be afraid. And you're going to have doubts. There's going to be problems. And Peter, look, you're going to deny me 3 times. Oh, no, certainly not. And you're going to begin to wonder whether or not all these things I've taught you are true and right and good. I want you to know it is true and right and good. And where I go to prepare a place for you. I've not given up on you. I will never give up on you. And so he sat there with his disciples at the table and he took the bread and he broke it. This is my body which is broken for you. This is him fulfilling the promise, the covenant that was made. This is my body which was broken for you. He says, take and eat this and become one with me. And he says, my blood is holy and pure and righteous and able to purify you from all your sin. And he poured the wine out. This is just juice, just in case you're wondering. He says, take and drink this and be holy and righteous and pure in my sight, in the sight of God. And so today as you come, all are welcome. All are free to come. For the invitation that God makes to be united with Him is an invitation to everyone. He says, come, join me in this. I will make a covenant with you that I will be faithful to you all the days of your life. Like to come down the center aisle. Pastor Maureen's on this side and I'm on this side, just in case you're wondering where we were going to be. But come, have communion with us today.